welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to Syosset Library's Turn the Page podcast. I'm Jessica, and I am really looking forward to chatting with this author today. Please introduce yourself and tell us about Sinkhole.
Hi, my name is Davida Breyer. I am a debut novelist, and my book is Sinkhole. It is it's a little bit of a hybrid. It's suspense. It's coming of age. It's got some humor. It's set in 1980s Central Florida.
So Florida is almost like its own subgenre of book, I feel like Florida noir, Florida horror. I mean, I grew up here in New York, but I spent a lot of time going down to visit my snowboard grandparents down in Palm Beach.
Okay.
And I am very aware of Florida as it is and as it was, and you know, how much has changed and how much hasn't. So you're from that area, right?
So I was born in South Florida and Miami, and lived, you know, lived everywhere from urban areas to very rural areas. Not very rural, rural by Southern Florida standards, but you know, the Everglades is its own place as well. And that was a very special place for me growing up. So it's kind of hard because there's the politics, there's the people, and then there's the actual flora and fauna, which flora can be a very different place depending upon where you are, where you grew up, and what you're visiting. It's not just a tourism state.
Oh, for sure. And one of the things I think that I've always noted, or at least more when I was an adult, not so much when I was a kid, is just how different Florida can be, like from street to street. You know, you go down one street and it's one type of area, and you go down another street and it's a completely different type of area. And in that way, it's almost, it's very segregated by class, by race, by so many different things. And it's such a weird place. And I don't necessarily say that in a bad way, but it's definitely very different. And I think a lot of people, when they think about Florida, especially now, they think about the politics of Florida, but they also think about Disney. And that is without a doubt what people think about when they think about Florida. Although now I feel like the two are sort of conflated in this dance of what's going on. But let's talk about the characters in your story and why the 1980s. So we have Michelle, who you find out from the beginning, her father died in a way that makes headlines in the way that people generally make fun of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it pretty much starts off too with finding out about her, and her father has died several years before in a car accident. Because a small, very harmless snake crawls out of his air vents, causes the accident. But it kind of sets the tone for so many of the things that happen later in the novel. And from the grief to just that, you know, harmless things cause all this damage.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I loved was just like this really interesting established of her like nuclear family, because a lot of this is a toxic friends story, which is by far one of my favorite subgenres of thriller, and there's probably a lot of reasons for that, but we'll get to that in a minute. There is sort of this idea that her mother wants to make sure that when people think about her husband who passed away, that they're not thinking about the snake. And she mentions that she felt like the obituary was for the snake, not for her husband. So she starts making her money writing obituaries for people.
Yeah.
which I thought was very interesting.
Well, and it kind of shows to the contradictions with people that she is helping other people with their grief, but this grief, it infuses this whole family, that she talks about it for other people, but they never talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And part of her task is to almost like make good for people who maybe not were the best, were not the best. So she has to think of ways to talk about someone, but in a way that it helps the people who've lost them deal with their grief, but also like she knows that maybe these people weren't so great. So she raises Michelle, and Michelle is around high school, right? It was high school, around high school, she becomes friends with this mysterious girl who calls herself Sissy. And like some of the things really stood out to me about Sissy in general. You find out pretty early on that Sissy is definitely more well off than Michelle. And that kind of speaks to that whole strange segregation. Michelle lives in a trailer, I believe. And like, you know, all of these places are called like estates or, you know, like
paradise.
And Michelle is very aware of almost like this irony of it. It's like, well, you know, these aren't estates. And you know, there's the segregation even within like even like the level of trailer that you live in, which comes into play with another friend who comes into the group later. But Sissy, we know she's well-to-do. And one of the things that stuck out at me immediately was that she was privy to Sanrio products. And in the 80s, for those of you who were not children or teenagers in the 80s, if you could afford Sanrio stationery, you knew that there was money there, either that or you were spending all your money on that because like the Twin Stars and Hello Kitty.
Twin Stars, yeah.
Yeah. Like that's what you spent extra money on to have as opposed to just regular stationery. I very much remember wanting to afford things in Sanrio Dreams and my parents being like, that is way too much money for a piece of paper that's just going to be thrown away.
Yeah, there was, I mean, that was an entire currency in the 80s. And the, you know, the pens, the pencils, the sticker, the smelly erasers, all of that. But, you know, Michelle is probably using notebook paper.
Of course. Yeah. But, you know, but she recognizes that Sissy, aside from, you know, what she realizes, oh, she must have money. When she starts putting these notes on Sanrio paper in her, you know, just like it's nothing in her locker, you know, that she's gained the favor of somebody who she thinks or, you know, is well to do. And that's another type of currency. You know, you want to be, you know, I mean, I don't know how much has changed, but you want to be friends with the kids who can afford Sanrio. You want to be, you know, in with that crowd. But Sissy is like this really strange person who there's so many layers to.
Yeah. And some of that is also perception. I mean, for Michelle, you know, she does remark that, you know, when you're, she is decidedly, you know, working class, and that level of where Sissy is, everything looks rich at us when you're at a certain point. And that's sort of where Michelle and her family is they're very working class. They're the working poor. And this is confusing because this is really Michelle's first view into that world. So it, you know, she's kind of lulled into thinking, this is, you know, this is how things should be. And it very much is about that class. I mean, I really wanted to bring class into it. And I wanted to talk about that a bit because it's something I see in a lot of novels where, you know, writers sometimes write the working poor and it becomes evident they don't really know what that means. They may have been broke once or twice, but they've never been poor.
I thought that it was a really good point of view, just sort of looking in on, you know, that time where somebody's sort of separating from their family and gravitating towards friends. But you know, and you know, the family knows that this friend is not a great person, but it's very difficult to sort of portray that. You know, Michelle has like a lot of things going for her that she probably doesn't realize. For one, she's an amazing swimmer.
Yeah, and she doesn't realize, I think because the family, they're so quiet together, what she has, and she does want more. She does want to leave, and she's very conflicted behind what her goals are and what she wants to be, as she's just beginning to find herself. And Sissy gets tied up in the middle of that. But how to explain that to her brother and her mother who she thinks don't want the same things.
So beyond her friendship with Sissy, another really important friendship that develops that time is her friendship with Morrison, who, by the way, I am a Doors fan, but I totally understand why Morrison wouldn't be. He has his name for reasons. Those who will read the book will find out, but clearly his mother was a Doors fan.
Clearly.
But what I liked about just the whole thing was that you know, you have these two people, again, from one from working poor and one from probably much less than even working poor. And then you have Sissy as like this almost like destructive lightning rod that draws them both to her. And what was interesting is that like Morrison and Michelle become close without Sissy first, and just that whole dropping her into the mix was just so well done. And I felt so authentic to just sort of the way that friend groups develop, especially people who maybe don't have the best relationship history or aren't really used to interacting in friend circles like that.
Yeah, they don't really have a good, clear view of what's normal or not normal, any of them. And the destruction is it's more of an erosion, because on the surface you don't see that. You see, you know, you from the outside you go, well, no, you know, they're best friends, and look, you know, Sissy's helping them, but it's really an erosion of the soul.
And it's set in Lorida, Florida, which is a real place.
It's actually, as I found, I would find out, I called it Lorida, Florida for the first year I was working on the book. It's Lorida.
I'm sorry for all the fans. I'm sorry for all the residents of Lorida. Yeah. But this kind of goes to speak to like what we were talking about in the beginning, how, you know, Florida automatically becomes a joke when you say it to people, I think, up north. I mean, again, yeah. New Yorker. And I remember when the whole Florida man, Florida meme, excuse me, Florida man, Florida woman meme began. Yep. And you could, you know, and for those who don't know, it's basically like if you read a news story that begins with either Florida woman or Florida man, it's going to be bonkers. And recently that actually, there was a story where I was like, oh no, that totally defied the meme. And I'm proud of that Florida man. I'm not going to go into what that was, but really that was like a thing for a while, to the point that there've been books. There was a book that was actually called Florida Man. And you just knew, looking at the title of this book is going to be bonkers. So automatically, you look at something called Lorida, Florida, and you're going to be like, of course it's called Lorida, Florida, because Florida.
Yeah. And that was initially what I thought. And then the more time I spent, you know, on Google Maps, researching, finding out more about the area, I did a research trip. I actually have, I have respect for Lorida, Florida, and did some research at the Sebring Historical Society and went out on to Lake Istipogue on an airboat. So, but it does look like Lorida, Florida, and it does look like a joke, but it is Lorida.
I was absolutely, I don't want to say thrilled, because it's kind of, I don't want to say I was thrilled, because it is a sad topic, but I was really glad that you brought the 80s AIDS crisis into the story, because it was so prevalent. And it was one of those things that there was so much shame in, you know, if you had a family member who had AIDS, or if you had, no matter how it was that you, you know, that you contracted it, I mean, the discrimination and the stigma attached to it was absolutely horrifying. And this in a time where being gay was not at all the way it is now. And I'm not saying it's great. And I'm certainly not saying that, that, you know, the gay community anywhere has it easy. However, you could not, there was no way you could be out in the 80s.
Not in high school.
Not in high school. And, you know, you have the contrast from, you know, you have the Don't Say Gay bill, and, you know, you see high schools in Florida walking out everywhere with the kids chanting gay, 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 which is, again, miles ahead of where the characters in this book would have been. But there is one of the characters is gay, and it absolutely changes what the experience for a high school student would be during that time.
And that was intentional on my part with the 80s, because I feel like we've seen so many nostalgia pieces and everything is neon and shiny and everybody has money.
Oh, the 80s was hideous. It was totally hideous. Actually, I think I always think about what was it? Hot Tub Time Machine, which I don't know if you've seen it, but John Cusack and a few people go back to the 80s in a hot tub, and they're like, oh, well, the 80s, it was fun, right? And I think John Cusack says something like, no, we had Reagan and AIDS, let's leave.
Yeah, and that was intentional. It's like, there were a lot of things that you don't see addressed, and that was one of them. And again, the 80s, you know, gay kids in small towns, no internet, no idea what the world really looks like outside of these places. And I kind of wanted to show that claustrophobic, that it's like this claustrophobic isolation. I know it's a contradiction, but part of it was that also gives Sissy some of her power, because she has the power to kind of take them out of, you know, Lurita to these different places, but then she's also holding secrets, and, you know, she's in control of so much for characters that are in a time and a place sexually, you know, economically, where it's very difficult to simply be.
Right. So I really loved how the story was told through Michelle's eyes. There's so much that I want to ask you about, but I also want people to read it. How did you sort of figure out at what points you were going to show us what, to let the reader sort of figure out what was going on versus what Michelle thought was going on?
I think astute readers will pick up on a lot more, because you figure out early on that Michelle might be an unreliable narrator, but not in the traditional sense. It's because this is what she genuinely believes, not what she's telling you. And it takes a while for her to figure out the truth that some readers may have figured out earlier on. So that, you know, it was trying to carefully unfold that the readers may be one step or two ahead of Michelle in certain places, but helping her unfold that and realize what did happen, and, you know, how she, you know, how it all came to be until she's, you know, realizing the truth.
So tell me about your publisher. This is the University of New Orleans Press.
I absolutely love and adore my publisher.
Yeah.
And I'm incredibly lucky, because I have worked with them as a distributor since sometime maybe around 2005, 2006. And I know the managing editor there, and it was one of those perfect, you know, perfect coincidence, perfect timing. I had the book kind of set aside for a while, and stress of COVID, everything. I end up in the ER because of just stress had actually caused my blood pressure to do some funny things. And I was like, oh my God, I've got to not work so much. I've got to figure out, you know, something for myself. And I'm going to pick the novel back up because it had been sitting gathering dust for 2 years. And around that same week, University of New Orleans sent in their new books for the fall season. And I'm like, oh, hey, this is cool. You've got a psychological thriller on here. And, you know, I basically send the worst pitch, which wasn't really meant to be a pitch, to the managing editor, just mentioning I was working on something. And I've known him for years and years. And little did I know, he had an interest in Central Florida. And yeah, that was just perfect time, perfect place. And I work with publishers all day long, but not from the author perspective. And I adore working with them.
Yeah, it's really fabulous. When I saw it, I was surprised. I actually did not know that, you know, university presses were publishing fiction. And it kind of led me to go and say, oh, what else are they publishing? Because this was such a fabulous book.
Yeah, they do a lot of really interesting and just there's, when you factor in mission with publishers, I really do like a lot of what they publish and always have. And this just was a perfect opportunity, I think.
So are you going to write another novel after this?
I would very much like to. I have started a file.
Yes.
I am starting to sketch things out. I'm starting to kind of get that nibble. I've been having to focus on this one so much this year, but I very much want to have an idea for a next one. And I just need a clear head to start working on it.
Yeah, it's sort of hard to get a clear head when we're still kind of coming out of this strange time.
And it just keeps getting stranger. So
yeah. Yeah. Well, much, much like Florida in a way, but not necessarily in a bad way. So the title Sinkhole was meant to have many layers, I believe.
It did. Yes, it does.
Yeah, I am going to be recommending it to a lot of people because I really want to know how they start to perceive things in this book, because really it was just a really good, good read, and it kept me going for quite a while.
That's been something that, you know, I thought I was writing one book, and it's been really fascinating for me to realize that everybody's taking a little something different away from it. It's not the same book for everyone, depending upon interest, experience, you know, which characters really hit them hardest. And that's been kind of fascinating to realize I wrote a different book for different people.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us. When does the book come out?
May 26th, so next Thursday.
Excellent. All right. Well, so by the time that this goes out, Sinkhole will be available at libraries, bookstores, everywhere. If you like nice, moody psychological thrillers, stories about toxic friendships, this book will absolutely deliver. And I do like that you call Michelle an unreliable narrator, but not a traditional unreliable narrator, because I think most of us are untraditional, unreliable narrators in our own lives. All depends on what we've really been through and, you know, to the extent of that. So thanks once again. This was Jessica with Syosset Libraries Turn the Page podcast. My guest was
Davida Breyer.
And we are going to close this chapter.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.